Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Numbers chapter 16. I'm going to do verses 25 through 50. The first 24 verses of Numbers 16 gave us the introduction to Korah's rebellion, and I'm going to finish up Korah's rebellion in this audio. Now, if you recall where we left off, Korah, who was of the tribe of Kohath, he was Moses' first cousin. He decided that he was going to have a rebellion because he wanted to be the priest instead of just a mere Levite. And he was joined in his rebellion with some Reubenites, Dathan and Abiram and On. On disappears. Dathan and Abiram have gone back to their tents. And Moses says he is asked, Dathan and Abiram, along with Korah and his troop, plus 250 leaders, in Israel, who had joined in the rebellion, he asked them to all come to the doorway of the tent of meeting there in the courtyard so they could have a big contest to see who was going to be the high priest. Dathan and Abiram have said, no, we're not going to participate, but Korah and the 250 rebellious leaders decided they would participate. And so this is the situation. The background is we start this audio. We start in Numbers chapter 16, verses 25 through 27. Then Moses arose and went to Dathan and Abiram, with the elders of Israel following him. And he spoke to the congregation, saying, depart now from the tents of these wicked men, and touch nothing that belongs to them, or you will be swept away in all their sin. So they got back from around the dwellings of Korah, Dathan and Abiram. And Dathan and Abiram came out and stood at the doorway of their tents, along with their wives and their sons and their little ones. All right, so what we have here, Moses leaving the doorway of the tent of meeting, where he was having his disputations with the leaders of the rebellion, 250 leaders plus Korah. Dathan and Abiram, of course, had left. They were back in their tents. And so now Moses leaves the courtyard of the temple and goes into the camp, and he goes to see Dathan and Abiram. And in the presence of the congregation there, he says, you need to get away from the tents of the rebels, Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, or you're going to be swept away. You're going to die is what he means. Well, most of the congregation listened and got away from the tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, but not Dathan and Abiram. They came out and stood at the doorway of their tents, and we can only interpret that standing there as standing in defiance, proudly and defiantly, as John Gill says. Otherwise, they would have gotten out of the vicinity because judgment was coming, but the rest of the congregation was smart enough to get out of there. Then in verse 25, it says, Moses arose and went to Dathan and Abiram. Where did he arise from? Well, remember, he had fallen on his face, so he probably arose from the ground where he had fallen on his face, and people dispute as to why he had fallen on his face. I say it's because he was praying to God to help redeem the situation. Could have been he was sitting on a seat by the door of the tabernacle. I don't think so. I think he came up from having fallen on his face. And he went to Dathan and Abiram. He went to them because they had refused to come to the door of the tabernacle. We saw that in the last audio in verse 12. Why did Moses even bother to go to the tents of Dathan and Abiram? John Gill suggests it was to convince them of their evil and folly, to get them to repent. Another option is the reason why he went out to Dathan and Abiram was so that Moses could point out to the congregation where to get back from to avoid being swallowed up. He's going to give them some on-the-site instructions. This is where the judgment's coming. You need to get out of there. Or it could be a combination of both reasons. Now, the elders that went out with Moses, this is not the 250 rebel leaders. This is probably the 70 elders who were chosen by Moses to assist him in governing. That was in Numbers 11:16. The Lord answered Moses, bring me 70 men from Israel known to you as elders and officers of the people. So that's probably who the 70 elders were. It could be the principal persons of the tribes. Every tribe had leaders, of course. It could have been those elders, but I think it's the 70 elders of Israel as a whole, probably. And they went out to observe the goings-on. Why did they follow Moses? To show Moses respect, to show that they approved of his conduct, to vindicate Moses' character. Their presence must have helped because the people were convinced to withdraw from the crime by separating from Dathan and Abiram. Now in verse 26, when Moses spoke to the congregation, depart from the tents of these wicked men, it must have been that some of the congregation had been swayed by the blandishments of the bad guys, the rebels. They must have been swayed, and Moses is trying to talk them out of it. Some of the congregation might have just gathered out of curiosity, however, probably a mixture of curiosity seekers as well as true rebels. And when Moses told them to depart from the vicinity of Dathan and Abiram, he didn't mean just leave personally. He meant take your tents and your other possessions along too, because they're all going to be destroyed. Now, Moses also said, as he wrote Numbers here in this verse 27, Moses wrote that along with Dathan and Abiram standing at the door of their tents were Dathan and Abiram's wives and sons and their little ones. Now, I don't know why it says sons and little ones, unless it means teenage sons and little baby kids and daughters, but it's offspring. And notice, they're going to die. And they didn't really have anything to do with this rebellion. This illustrates the awful truth of human life, is that little children are affected by the sins of their parents. If a little baby is born crack addicted to cocaine because his mother was on cocaine, that little kid suffers even though the little kid had nothing to do with it. Likewise, Adam sinned, and the whole human race, although they didn't have anything to do with it, they inherit the sin, because we're not as individualistic as we think we are in our highly individualistic Western culture. We go down to Numbers 16, 28 through 30. Moses said, "By this you shall know that the Lord has sent me to do all these deeds, for this is not my doing. If these men die the death of all men, or if they suffer the fate of all men, then the Lord has not sent me. But if the Lord brings about an entirely new thing, and the ground opens its mouth and swallows them up with all that is theirs, and they descend alive into Sheol, then you will understand that these men have spurned the Lord." When he says, "The Lord has sent me to do all these deeds," that could be all the many things Moses had done to get Israel out of Egypt, but I think what he's talking about is to direct the earthquake opening up. Now, how did Moses know that the earth was going to open up? Well, he had apparently been tipped off by the Lord as to what was going on. After all, he's been talking to God face to face. By this time, we should not be surprised at what Moses knows about what God's going to do. And he's saying, you know, if you happen to descend alive into Sheol, which is a very poetic saying of being swallowed up in the ground. Sheol means, in the NIV, is translated grave. KJV is pit. Sheol can either, it's like Hades in the Greek. Sheol is the shadowy place of the dead, or it actually means a physical grave in the ground. And so this would be a physical grave in the ground, a hole as they fall through the cracks. Number 16, verses 31 through 34. As he finished speaking all these words, the ground that was under them split open, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up, and their households, and all the men who belonged to Korah with their possessions. So they and all that belonged to them went down alive to Sheol. And the earth closed over them, and they perished from the midst of the assembly. All Israel who were around them fled at their outcry, for they said, "The earth may swallow us up." Quite dramatic here. Now, when it says all the men who belong to Korah with their possessions, it doesn't literally mean all. All can mean many, according to the lexicons, or very many. Korah's sons weren't killed. So all of the men who belong to Korah, what about his sons? Numbers 26:11 says the sons of Korah, however, did not die. It's 10 chapters later we can see that. Psalm 42:1, for the choir director, a maskil of the sons of Korah. So Korah's descendants lasted. They endured. They weren't all killed. But it means that basically all the people who were rebelling with Korah went down. But Korah himself did not get swallowed up. He was with the 250 false prophets, as we'll see in a minute. And presumably, and it's pretty clear, it doesn't directly say, but presumably he got burnt up with those 250 prophets. I think of the two horrible deaths, I think I'd rather get swallowed up alive than get burnt alive. From all I've been reading in medieval history, being burnt alive was a horrible way to go. The torture was horrible as the flames enveloped one. Now the congregation that fled, those that fled in verse 34, some of them were guilty of rebelling him. And so I'm sure that they were tainted with some rebellion there, maybe sympathized with it, maybe associated with the rebels. They would have perished had it not been for the intercession of Aaron and Moses. Remember in the previous audio, Moses said, "Are you going to kill the whole congregation for the sin of one man?" Well, it wasn't the sin of one man. Moses is putting the best face. He was acting like a lawyer spinning his case, because the Israelites was more than one man who rebelled. But that's what he said. And God twice said, get away. I'm going to kill them all. But he didn't. God showed some mercy in the midst of all this judgment. Number 16, verses 35 through 37. He did kill all the rebels, though. He didn't kill the innocent Israelites. Number 16, 35 through 37, fire also came forth from the Lord and consumed the 250 men who were offering the incense. Those were the 250 rebels that Moses had said, come to the doorway of the tent of meeting tomorrow and bring your censers, and we'll see if God will light your fire, or whether he's going to light Aaron's fire. Verse 36, then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, say to Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, that he shall take up the censers out of the midst of the blaze, for they are holy, and you shall scatter the burning coals abroad. I like that note of practicality. The 250 bad guys are burnt up, but they had censers of some sort, and they were made out of bronze. He said, we're going to use that bronze. We're not going to let these worthless slugs that just got killed, we're not going to let them waste all that bronze. Now, this fire that came out of heaven in verse 35 is probably lightning. Let's read Leviticus 10:2. And fire came out from the presence of the Lord and consumed them, and they, that's Nadab and Abihu, died before the Lord. That sounds like just a blast of lightning from the Shekinah glory. Blam! Why is it probably lightning? Because the bodies were not consumed by fire. Leviticus 10:4 says this, Moses called also to Mishael and Elzaphan, the sons of Aaron's uncle Uzziel, and said to them, come forward, carry your relatives away. So there was a charred body, at least. If it was fire, that it would completely consume a body till there's nothing left. So it's probably lightning in that case. And I've read some commentators, too, that say that that's a good way, a permissible way to translate the Hebrew word. So let's just assume lightning here, or some form of lightning, came forth from the Lord. That would be from the Shekinah glory cloud, from whence the voice was coming that was speaking with Moses. And so that fire ran through 250 men, that lightning, and killed them all. Now, it does say in verse 37 that there's a blaze there that these censers, that these 250 censers were in the midst of, so it could be the fire actually caught them on fire. Or it could be just straight out fire from the glory cloud. I'm not going to stand on a hill and defend that to the death. They were destroyed, and Eleazar's told to go get the fire pans, the censers. Eleazar, of course, is the eldest son of Aaron that's still alive. Nadab and Abihu have already been fried because of offering strange fire back in the book of Exodus. So Eleazar's the successor of the high priesthood. He's the top dog here, and that's why he's in charge of going to get the censers. Now, one of my commentators says that Eleazar was selected to go get these censers so the high priest Aaron would not be defiled going out among the corpses. I guess that's a reasonable speculation. We don't want the high priest to get defiled, so we'll send his son to do the dirty work. Now, it's interesting in verse 37 that the text says that the censers are holy. Censers being used by 250 blasphemous rebels are holy. Why is that? Well, John Gill says it's because the incense in them had been offered to the Lord. You offer something to the Lord, it's holy. Isn't that amazing? Even the censers of false priests were considered holy. And Eleazar is said that after you get the censers out of the blaze, then you scatter the burning coals. Now, this is burning coals of human beings, folks. Scatter them abroad. What's the point of that? To show the rejection of the 250. You're scattered into nothingness, you stupid rebels. We go down to Numbers 16, verses 38 through 40. As for the censers of these men who have sinned at the cost of their lives, let them be made into hammered sheets for a plating of the altar, since they did not present them before the Lord, and they are holy, and they shall be for a sign to the sons of Israel. So Eleazar the priest took the bronze censers which the men who were burned had offered, and they hammered them out as a plating for the altar, as a reminder to the sons of Israel that no layman who is not of the descendants of Aaron should come near to burn incense before the Lord, so that he will not become like Korah and his company, just as the Lord had spoken to him through Moses. Now that altar that got bronze hammered into sheets for a plating of the altar, that's the altar of burnt offering. It was already covered with bronze. It got some more bronze added to it. Now these censers were different than Aaron and the priest's censers. I mentioned in the last audio, 250 censers is a lot. If there were gold or silver, that would have been unlikely that that many censers would have been available. And so they used substitute pans, bronze things that they might have had around the household. Aaron and his priest used silver censers, and the high priest on the Day of Atonement used golden censers. Well, these were bronze censers, and they were nailed up on the side of the bronze altar. Notice, by the way, that it's normally the golden altar that burns incense inside the holy place, inside the tabernacle. This is out in the courtyard. It's a little bit different. Now, verse 40 says that the bronze censers or the bronze plating on the altar is to be a reminder so that no layman will come near the altar or come near the tabernacle, so he will not become like Korah and his company. Well, that mention of Korah tells us that he was burnt up along with his company. It doesn't directly say he was burnt up, but it says you don't want to become like Korah and his company. Well, that's a pretty clear implication. Korah got fried. Now, there's an ambiguous pronoun here in verse 40. The layman should not become like Korah and his company, just as the Lord has spoken to him through Moses. Who's the him? Well, I believe it's Korah. There's no direct verse that says this that I can see, but it makes sense. God had spoken to him, but the question is where had God spoken to Korah that you're not supposed to come near? Well, Numbers 16:26 says this, he, Moses, spoke to the congregation saying, depart now from the tents of these wicked men and touch nothing that belongs to them. You will be swept away in their sin. Korah would have heard that, of course. He was there as they were all gathered around Moses. So the Lord has spoken to him. Hey, you're going to die. We could also look back at verse 10. Well, we can start at verse 8. Let's read that again. Then Moses said to Korah, hear now, you sons of Levi, is it not enough for you that the God of Israel has separated you from the rest of the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself, to do the service of the tabernacle of the Lord, and to stand before the congregation to minister to them, and that he has brought you near Korah and all your brothers, sons of Levi, with you? And are you seeking for the priesthood also? That was a direct admonition of Moses to Korah, so that's what's being referred to here in this verse, in my opinion. Some other people have suggested that the hymn, just as the Lord has spoken to him, the hymn was Aaron, just as the Lord has spoken to Aaron through Moses, or just as the Lord has spoken to Eleazar through Moses. I don't think so. We go now to Numbers 16, verses 41 through 45. But on the next day, all the congregation of the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron, saying, you are the ones who have caused the death of the Lord's people. It came about, however, when the congregation had assembled against Moses and Aaron, that they turned toward the tent of meeting, and behold, the cloud covered it, and the glory of the Lord appeared. Then Moses and Aaron came to the front of the tent of meeting, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, get away from among this congregation, that I may consume them instantly. Then they fell on their faces. The next day, in verse 41, the very next day, after the earth had opened up and swallowed the Dathan and Abiram and family, and then after the 250 leaders of the rebellion in Korah had gotten fried by lightning or fire or both, after that had happened, it took them all of 24 hours. The next day, they're griping again. And then they blamed Moses for the death of the Lord's people. God did it, but didn't they say it's Moses' fault? How stupid can one group of people be? Adam Clark says the people had decided likely that the fire and earthquake was done by Moses' cunning. Well, how can you fake lightning from heaven and an earthquake? How can you cunningly do? No, I don't know what Clark is talking about. It's obvious they're just out and out rebelling against God. And to accuse him of killing the Lord's people, what a fancy way of calling rebels. Moses had done just the opposite. He had saved the people's lives. Numbers 16:22 in this chapter, last audio, but they fell on their faces, Moses and Aaron did, and said, O God, God of the spirits of all flesh, when one man sins, will you be angry with the entire congregation? He's trying to get them off. He's saying, hey, just get Korah, but all the rest of the people, have mercy on them. He saved their lives. God only punished the rebels. He didn't punish the whole congregation like he threatened to, and he's going to threaten again here in verse 45. He says, I'm going to consume them all. So Moses protected their lives, and they accused Moses of killing the Lord's people. Now, in verse 42, the text says the congregation had assembled against Moses and Aaron. Now, that assembling against means they probably assembled in order to kill Moses and Aaron. Now, in verse 45, when God tells Moses and Aaron to separate themselves from the congregation so that he could consume the congregation instantly, that's not the first time he had threatened to do that. He had done that also previously in verse 21, previous audio. Separate yourselves from among this congregation that I may consume them instantly. So twice he's threatened to wipe them out. We go now to verses 46 through 50, and we'll finish up this audio. Moses said to Aaron, take your censer and put it in fire from the altar and lay incense on it. Then bring it quickly to the congregation and make atonement for them, for wrath has gone forth from the Lord. The plague has begun. I forgot to mention, I read it, but I forgot to point out that in the previous five verses there, the cloud that was, the cloud appeared over the tent of meeting. The cloud covered it and the Lord appeared. So in other words, apparently the Shekinah glory cloud was there in the altar, in the Holy of Holies over the altar. And all of a sudden, God just appears in the Shekinah glory cloud through the roof of the tabernacle, I suppose. But it is, however he did it, he appeared before all the people. And that means, there's trouble. There's trouble coming. I can imagine the people saw that and they're thinking, oh no, we've already had a bunch of people toasted by fire yesterday. And oh no, we got more trouble. The people were fools to deal with Almighty God that way. So now, let me start over again in Numbers 46 through 50. Moses said to Aaron, take your censer and put it in fire from the altar and lay incense on it. Moses is trying to assuage the anger of Yahweh here. Bring it, bring the censer quickly to the congregation and make atonement for them, for wrath has gone forth from the Lord. The plague has begun. Then Aaron took it as Moses had spoken and ran into the midst of the assembly. For behold, the plague had begun among the people. So he put on the incense and made atonement for the people. Aaron did that. He took his stand between the dead and the living Aaron, so that the plague was checked. But those who died by the plague were 14,700, besides those who died on account of Korah. Then Aaron returned to Moses at the doorway of the tent of meeting, for the plague had been checked. Now the incense fire in Aaron's fire pan came from the altar of burnt offering, which was unusual. Usually incense was offered on the golden altar. This was sort of a special case here. And usually when the people sinned, for the whole congregation, that'd be a bull offered as a sin offering. There wasn't any time for that. So Moses told Aaron, this is the fastest and the best we can do. Get your fire pan, put some coals on it and some incense. And God didn't tell him to do this. Moses did it on his own motion. The idea is, boy, God is angry. We have got to appease him. And that's the way you do that, you know. Send up some smoke of prayer. Now, this plague that Moses mentions here, he says the plague has begun. I'm sure that Moses was tipped off from the Lord. Could be that, because Moses was often tipped off by God because he spoke to him so directly. It could be he just saw people starting to die, grabbing their throats or whatever and crashing to the ground. I don't know how fast acting this plague was, but at any rate, he knew that people were going to die and the whole congregation was going to die unless Aaron stopped it. It's amazing how fast Aaron ran to atone for the sins of people. It says he ran, and they sure didn't deserve it, but he's running to save the people. Again, I think it's because they're not so concerned about the individuals. They're thinking these people are ingrates, deadbeats, rebels, idolaters, fools, but that's the people that God had chosen to inherit Abraham's promises, to inherit the land, to provide an offspring as a blessing to the nations. And how is that promise going to be fulfilled unless the people are saved? And what's going to keep the people of Egypt and all the other pagan nations surrounding them from laughing and saying, what kind of a God is Yahweh? Can't preserve his people. They're all dead in the wilderness. So I don't think they have personal motives of compassion here, Moses and Aaron. They had bigger things in mind. Now, 14,700, that might be a round number, 700. But at any rate, they started to fall in the wilderness. And that is the beginning of a prediction God had already made to them. Numbers 14:29, your corpses will fall in this wilderness. Now, this was after they had believed the report of the 10 bad spies, the evil report. You're like grasshoppers. They're giants. You're going to die. Don't go up into the promised land. And God said, your corpses will fall in this wilderness, in verse 29 of Numbers 14, even all your numbered men, that means men of the census. So, corpses falling in the wilderness, it's already happened, 14,700, they're lighter now by that much, plus the 250 false priests and families of Dathan and Abiram who've already died. The NIV Study Bible has an interesting note. They say that this number, 14,700, makes sense only if the community is as large as the census list of chapter 2 suggests. The reason that's an issue is a lot of people have trouble with so many people going through the wilderness, so they carp about the numbers and they say, no, it can't be that big. I don't have any problem with it, but I mentioned that in case you might. Ladies and gentlemen, thus is the sad ending of Korah's rebellion. And one last note before I go, I used to read these passages of judgment always with the idea of, oh, I need to defend God. He looks so unmerciful. Hey, maybe we ought to start looking at it at how evil is it is to raise your fist up against a holy God. I'm speaking of Americans. I just saw a Pew poll yesterday. 4% of Americans have a biblical worldview. That doesn't surprise me, but 9% of evangelicals, that's right, because they're God. He's just an old grandfather up on a couch throwing bonbons down to his loving people who, they might sin a little bit. They might go off the beaten path a little bit. And he just says, come on, let's go over here, sons and daughters. No, he's the holy God. You don't mess with a holy God. Ladies and gentlemen, with that, we are now prepared to go to chapter 17 in our next audio, verses 1 through 13, the whole chapter, Aaron's Staff Buds. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.